is Dave.
The Senate Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Division will come to order. Welcome, everyone. Good morning. Some of us didn't get much sleep, so I apologize if I'm a little slow this morning or whatever. Whatever I am, I don't know, but tired. Let's start with Senator Scogin, Senate File 1123, the lands bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Senate File 1123 this year is the annual lands bill. It's something that I've carried since I was elected. It comes out of the Environment Committee, and it is annually a bill that carries a lot of different provisions, cleaning up some technical problems or on state land administration, state land sales. This year there's 36 sections involving agency provisions, provisions from senators on seven other provisions. Most are technical in nature. Kathy Lewis is here to help us on the technical pieces, and the bill is before you, and I'd stand for questions.
All right, let's take a look at the – members, do we have the fiscal note? We don't have a fiscal note.
No, they really shouldn't. Mueller has it, I don't know.
It's one done on 2-6.
There was one done in late February, Madam Chair.
Dan was going to bring it up.
Lewis has it.
Dan's busy. Unfortunately. All right, while we're waiting, are there questions from the committee? Senator Scogin, I've been thinking about one issue that I was concerned about in the policy committee, and I offered an amendment to strike out the language about 10 Mile Lake property. And since that time, I've heard from a property owner up there. And what he said is that their plan was to get a small – they're hoping, if they can purchase this land, is to get a small piece of the adjacent state land and attach it to their lot. He wants 115 by 100 feet. His cabin is 28 by 28 feet, and he wants to just make it a tiny bit bigger. And let's see, how many years has he been there? 9 years. And he said the adjacent frontage is owned by him and three neighbors. I don't know. Seemed like it might be the right thing to do. I do have an amendment, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'm the chair.
Oh, you're the chair, Madam Chair.
I told you
chair.
I was tired. Thank you. I'll just talk to myself up here. So anyway, I think the problem with a lot of these proposals that we get is that we don't know the details. We don't know the story. We don't know what they look like. We don't know whether, and I don't think we get, honestly, very good information about what the impact is on the nearby waters, what the surrounding landscape is. But I guess I was, talking to this landowner, I was convinced that it might be the right thing to do to let this piece of land go. So I was going to propose putting the language back in the bill that I deleted in committee.
Okay, we're looking at it, and we're thinking this is the original language.
It's the same original language that I had moved to delete.
And, Madam Chair, to your point, I mean, if you look at the descriptions of a lot of these, I mean, you know, it's 65 feet more or less. It's measurements. It's taking care of some trespasses. It's little unusable pieces that we want to try to sell to a neighbor to allow them to, to just kind of tidy up the land in the state.
And this is still a public sale.
And I mean, I'm looking at this amendment. I certainly would consider it a friendly amendment. It is the original language.
School trust land.
Senator Vickerman.
Is this the one that we visited?
Yes. Yes.
What would this do to change it? Because I thought it was a fantastic piece of property. I think you might have been on that trip, too.
Yeah, and Senator Vickerman, that's what really caught my eye, was that this was a pristine, unusual, beautiful lake that has an amazing history, an amazingly strong group of landowners around it that include some really distinguished people who have worked very hard to preserve the lake's character and its pristineness. And so, you know, and we were studying what they've been doing up there because it's really a model for other really remarkable lakes in Minnesota. And so that's what got my attention. I thought, well, what do we want to do selling land there that could be developed? But I guess I've reconsidered because the way I hear the story told, it's a small piece of land. It's not really usable for any purpose by itself. And there's cabins there, and the intention would be just, and it's not waterfront. It would be, the intention would be for existing property owners, if they are able to buy it. Of course, it's a public auction, but they're hoping to purchase it just to, you know, expand their lots a little bit rather than have it be turned into, you know, a drive-through or something. So I hope, I mean, you never know on these things. You don't have a guarantee of the outcome. So that, it concerns me, and I think, Senator Vickerman, we're all concerned.
We got friends on both sides.
I loved it the way it was. But if it's, if it helps somebody with, but I don't want a hotel built on there.
I don't either. I don't either. We could put a little sentence on there that says that limits the use of the land to, would that be unconstitutional to have a public sale and limit it to adjoining landowners for purposes of, would that be unconstitutional perhaps?
Madam Chair, I think it might be. Since the Constitution requires a public sale of school trust lands.
Yeah, that would make it not so fair. Senator Frederickson.
I think our concerns would be covered by the existing zoning that's already in place there.
Yeah, I mean, and we could also, we could require, you know, limits to development on it. That wouldn't be an equal protection issue among different buyers. But what do you know what the zoning is there by chance? You probably
could be a fiduciary issue, though.
Don't know what the zoning
that would reduce
no,
the value.
Madam Chair, no.
Well, you know what, members, if there's some discomfort with this, we could hold off, and I can try to get more information.
Madam Chair, I'd like that because that's a once in a lifetime piece. If we lose our part of it.
All right. It hasn't been offered. Let's sit on this. I know Senator Frederickson, Senator Vickerman, and all. We were all at this lake last summer, and we saw it. And maybe we can continue to work and find out more information.
Maybe Ms. Lewis could give us information that would be helpful.
Sure, Senator Frederickson, do you want to ask some questions of Ms. Lewis?
Ms. Lewis, does the what's the department's stand on this property by 10 Mile Lake?
Madam Chair, members, Kathy Lewis with the Department of Natural Resources. This parcel on 10 Mile Lake was proposed for the land sale bill by the Department of Natural Resources. We're taking part of the government lot and offering it. We would offer it for public sale because that's what's required under the Constitution. It's school trust land. The remainder of the government lot, portion of that does border water. We have a water access site there, and we would be expanding the water access site. If there are limitations put on the property beyond the zoning laws, that does affect the value of the property, and thus it would be an impact to the school trust fund to put a limitation on the value. But the party would have to comply with the zoning laws. The potential buyers are particularly the cabin owners bordering the property, and they are looking to expand their septic system, which would actually improve the water quality of the lake. So if they are the buyers, the public sale, there would be an improvement to the lake quality.
Madam Chair, this particular 11-acre piece does not have any lakeshore frontage on it.
Pardon me?
I was just saying that this particular 11-acre piece doesn't actually have any lakeshore property on it.
And Madam Chair, Ms. Lewis, how many acres is this? Is this parcel that we're considering selling? Is it the entire 11 acres, or is it a portion of the 11 acres?
Ms. Lewis.
Madam Chair, Senator, the total government lot is 37.8 acres, and this sale would be 11.16 acres.
Just just take.
Okay, thank you.
Which one are we dealing with right here?
Well,
Senator
nobody
Ferguson,
moved it.
Do you
talking
have
about
questions?
This amendment.
Okay, Senator Shadman.
I remember this discussion. I don't recall the urgency on the sale. That was kind of the thing for me.
That's
and
true.
So I just, I mean, with land prices and the lack of urgency,
it doesn't require the sale.
You know, it seemed to me to be better to prove, you know, it would be prudent just to leave it for the time being and. Unless someone has different information.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Chaudhary, I wouldn't maybe label it urgent, but if the landowner next to this piece was able to buy that property, they would upgrade their septic system, which all indications are would be good to the lake. The sooner the better on getting that upgrade, and this land would allow them to do that.
Senator Scogin, I don't remember hearing that. Piece before? Where did you get that information?
Ms. Lewis just shared it with me.
Madam Chair, Ms. Lewis, what would be the setback on this parcel? Even though it's not lakeshore, I remember it was close.
Ms. Lewis?
Madam Chair, Senator, the local zoning laws would apply in this case for the setbacks. I don't have that off the top of my head. They're usually around 150 feet back from a shoreline area. Really, but I'd have to check to see what this lake was for the actual zoning laws in the county to give the exact answer.
You know, members, I think we're having a really good discussion here. I think maybe we should just hold off on this issue for now. I'll try to get some more information. Maybe on the floor we could reoffer it or bring it to conference if it's in the house. We can figure it out. I don't think there is a big urgency, but let's try to get a little more clarity and make sure everybody's really clear this is the right thing to do. I think that would be my recommendation. Let's just leave it for now and come back to it later. And I will make a point of working on that. Senator Saxon?
Madam Chair, the E5 amendment. Madam Chair, this was brought up in policy, and we didn't have enough information. The stakeholders hadn't had a chance to talk about it as thoroughly as they should. But at this particular time, it's basically about having a home-based business that needs a conditional use permit in a wild and scenic river district. It's up by Oneami on the Rum River. And so the county, the DNR, the neighbors, all feel that issuing this conditional use permit would be acceptable in protecting this wild and scenic river area.
So, Senator Saxhog, this decision could not be made locally because of the wild and scenic river designation. Is
correct.
That true? And I remember there's some discussion about this in the policy committee. And I think wasn't the original bill talking about amending the wild and scenic river designation?
Right.
Okay, this is a much better approach.
It is.
Appreciate
it's a little.
So what's your – how do you – and I know Senator Phoebe has worked a lot on this. Could we ask Senator Phoebe to come up and just speak to the issue of – this is – welcome to the committee.
Thanks, Madam Chair, members.
Senator Phoebe, this is in your district, and can you tell me your conversations with community members? Are you certain there's no local opposition to this?
I am unaware of any local opposition, and actually how this first came to me is local zoning, local county officials, and DNR have had many issues over the years with the wild and scenic Rum River area and how it's laid out, and they really need – it's a project for another day. It's a much bigger project, and it's one that we would like to address maybe in the interim. This family and what we found is that people are unable to even open a home-based business, so not construct any extra structures, no buildings, nothing like that, but even like a home daycare is unable to open in this area right now. And this family came to me. It's a hardship case for the Winnias. They came and testified, many of you will remember, and had gone through a lot of different hoops and different avenues to try to address this situation. And I worked with DNR and the local zoning to craft this language that wouldn't interrupt the property in any way, and so there's no local opposition that I know of.
Senator Phoebe, it looks like the way this is written, it would allow any other home-based business to that fits these this criteria to also get in it.
Correct.
Be eligible. I mean, the local government still gets to decide?
Correct. But also would not encourage, I mean, they couldn't build new structures, things like that, anything like that.
Are you aware of any other folks who are would be interested in this kind of exemption that want to open a daycare or some other home business?
Madam Chair, members, not currently. I haven't heard of any.
All right. Thank you. Questions? Senator Chaudhry.
And Madam Chair, this is a compromise language that was worked out after all the concerns were raised in the policy committee. So it's I've had a chance to review the language as well. And I think it's tight, and it addresses concerns that I had with the original bill, but it still is reasonable. And if someone does have a home, a house existing, they want to have a home-based business within the proper, you know, local ordinances, whether it's a daycare or something else, I think that's fine. I don't think that's an impact on the Wild and Scenic River area. And I think this language is pretty tight that you can't build another house or structure to do that. It's only at the time of this bill. I like your haircut, by the way, Senator Bickerman.
Senator Bickerman.
Good luck at number five. Satisfies all state and local requirements, so that should be the safeguard in this. I think that's the way I read it.
Madam Chair, Senator Bickerman, for me, the important part is on two, residence and accessory structures constructed prior to the effective date of this section. That was important to me as well.
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, you like my haircut? I had to get that before they tax barbers, and then I'll have
to. It's the only group they left out, right?
Madam Chair, Senator Bickerman.
Which they are.
Senator Bickerman, so did I.
And members, I haven't had time to get a haircut, so that means I better hurry.
You know, Madam Chair, people watch this on television.
We are
just,
on televised today,
just
by
let
the way.
Me be clear. There is no proposal in front of the legislature or the Senate Tax Committee or the House Tax Committee to put a tax on haircuts. None, nada, zero. And
Madam
I
Chair,
would go so far as to say, as long as I'm the tax chair, that is not going to happen.
Thank you for that very important clarification. Because I probably will wait till after session then to get a haircut. Appreciate
well,
it.
Well, anyway, Madam Chair, I would move the A5 amendment.
Thank you. Senator Perso, did you have a comment? That was, are you just
that's how rumors get
expressing your feelings? All right. Any further discussion on the A5 amendment? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
Thank you.
Any other amendments? Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have an oral delete amendment, Section 8 of Article 2. It involves, it's on page 21, involves a piece of land that the DNR purchased with money from the Dingle Johnson Sport Fish Restoration Program from the federal government. The request here, or what would be in the lands bill, is that that particular piece of land would be purchased by a private individual.
Section and 8 you're talking about.
Right. Section 8. Section 8 of Article 2.
This isn't, Senator Saxock, this isn't the one where they want to sell it to the heir, is it?
Yes.
It is. It just doesn't say that anymore.
Yes, it does.
It does? Yep. Sorry. I didn't read it carefully.
21.30.
All right.
And Madam Chair, the one other thing I would say is that we've had objections from the DNR and Cass County and the Township and Area Lakes Associations, and I just don't think that this is good precedent setting policy. So,
questions, that,
Madam Chair,
discussion.
this has been a contentious piece even through the subcommittee process, and it has stayed in, but. I knew that both parties would want to weigh in again today. I know you asked me privately to keep the discussion short on this one, but it's up to you who you want to bring to the table. All parties are here.
Okay. is Senator Letts also here? I see Senator Olson. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Yeah, I figured he'd be here, too. Members, I'm going to call on everybody. I just want to state this is the Finance Committee, and we don't want to rehash all the testimony. We spent a really long time on this in the Policy Committee.
Twice.
So, brief, 2 hours?
Twice.
Subcommittee.
Okay.
Subcommittee, too.
So we're going to take just a couple minutes of testimony from the senators, and then hopefully we can vote. Members who had their hands up first on the committee. All right. Senator Olson, we'll call on you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, Madam Chair, I just have to say this is something that came to my attention after it was in the bill. I'm guessing that Senator Letts didn't realize how concerned that people in my district were going to be about this proposed sale. But since this provision was added to the bill, I've received resolutions from Cass County, from the Township, the Lake Association, the Watershed Management District, as well as letter from the DNR talking about the use of this property, and a number of the people who live on Roosevelt Lake and in the surrounding area who access this land for fishing, for gathering natural spring water, picnicking, and other public purposes. The land was taken through a process, and apparently the family members challenged this back in the 70s, so it did have a court hearing that apparently wasn't appealed, and it's been used for the same purpose since that period of time, the same purpose it was taken. I do have a color map that shows the location of this property. It's at the bottom of the overall land that is being used for the fishery. And actually, there's additional land on the other side of this property, so this would be kind of in the middle of the land that's being used. This is, from what I understand, really a unique trout fish hatchery. There's someone here from Trouts Unlimited, Mr. John Lincheski, if you want to take the time, who would speak in opposition to this on behalf of that organization. The DNR has expressed a concern to me not only because of the unique nature of this property, which is really not duplicated elsewhere in the state, but because of the precedent they're concerned it would set, as well as, from what I understand, are some federal requirements related to this land. When it was purchased, that wasn't something I was aware of when I wrote the initial letter to you. And actually, you know, I've continued to learn more about this over the last couple of weeks simply because so many people are concerned about this proposed sale. Thank you, Madam Chair.
The language of native printing in here.
No, just do it. Thank you, Senator Olson. Are there questions for Senator Olson? Senator Letts.
Madam Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to speak on this. There was an extensive hearing in Senator Scogin's subcommittee when many of the parties that have an interest in this had an opportunity to speak then, and it was again heard in the full policy committee. So I'd respectfully suggest that the policy has already been adopted with regard to the sale of the land. I don't see that there are any specific financial considerations involved except for the price of the land. There is an amendment that Mr. Knopf has prepared that would address two things. One is the price of the land. An independent appraisal would establish the market value, and the Carlson family would repurchase the land at that amount. And also, secondly, dealing with the two environmental issues that Madam Chair had expressed to me as of concern, one conservation easement for the riparian interests, and secondly, dealing with restrictions on wells, it would provide for a 75-foot conservation easement on either side of the center line at the creek, and for a restriction only one private standard well, residential well, could be allowed to be constructed on the land. There is a sand point well that's there, has been for 32 years or longer when the family owned and used the land. It was not capped by the DNR. Although they did burn down the family's buildings, they left the debris sitting there on the land. So the land isn't even in pristine condition. There are other private property owners along the stream who also have wells and who also have access to the stream and the pond. So Mr. Carlson is not asking for any use of the land other than what is already existing in other parcels along that area. If you want to go back, it is Mr. Carlson's family's land. They had it in their family for a long time. It was taken by eminent domain originally for the purpose of expanding the hatchery. That hatchery expansion never took place. It never took place. The hatchery is drawing, I'm told, about 200 million gallons a year out of the aquifer. That aquifer is 152 feet below the surface level. So a private residential well at a 3/4-inch pipe is not going to affect the static head of that aquifer. And Mr. Carlson is a plumber by profession and training, so he understands some of this too. That's what he understands he's been told is the case. He does not intend any use other than his private use, hunting, fishing, and spending time with his family, just like all of the other property owners there, including the property owners on Roosevelt Lake, who have their little piece of heaven on Roosevelt Lake. And our suggestion, Mr. Carlson should be able to reclaim his piece of heaven.
Thank you, Senator Leff. Senator Chaudhry.
Madam Chair, if I can just maybe just encapsulate what this issue is. A while ago, the DNR condemned this piece of land in order to create a fish hatchery. The fish hatchery was never created. However, since then, the land has adopted other value, conservation value. And so Senator Latz and his constituent want to buy back the land because it was never used for the intended condemnation. The locals, however, want to retain this for the conservation purpose that has arisen since then, and that's where we're stuck. So, that's what we've been wrestling with for the last couple of years. The Lands Committee felt that it was proper to move forward with this. The Policy Committee talked about it more and wanted to find out if there was some way to accommodate both interests. That was one of the reasons why I supported the provision. I said at the end of the last committee meeting that if we can find something to try and preserve the conservation nature of this parcel, but at the same time honor the appeared to me are legitimate legal rights of Mr. Latz, Senator Latz's constituents. Let's try that. I think the A3 amendment does that, and I'm comfortable with the resolution of this issue with this amendment on it. So I'll move the A3.
We have an amendment pending.
Thank you.
And I guess the A3 would be, well, no, we would have to, we already have an amendment.
We have Senator Sachs-Hogg amendment.
Okay, so we would either, depending on the discussion, we would either have to defeat Senator Sachs-Hogg's amendment and then adopt the A3, or depending on how Senator Sachs-Hogg feels, he could withdraw his own amendment. But let's hear what he has to say.
Senator Sachs-Hogg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think that this letter that we have in front of us from the Department of Natural Resources, new information we didn't have aware of at the time of our policy hearing. Again, it's back to the whole idea that this land was purchased with funds from the federal government, and I think maybe we ought to let the DNR have a few minutes or a few seconds or whatever we have for them to comment on this.
I think you're right, Senator Sachs-Hogg. Is it Ms. Lewis going to speak to this? No. All right. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Ed Bogus, Deputy Director of Fish and Wildlife for the Department of Natural Resources. And This land was acquired with federal Dingell Johnson money. It would require, if this were to pass, it would also require approval of the federal government to sell it. I just wanted to correct one point, and that is that when the land was acquired, it was acquired to forestall future development and to provide a discharge area for the water. It wasn't acquired to expand the hatchery, and it continues to serve that original function.
Thank you, Mr. Bogus. Questions for Mr. Bogus? Senator Chaudhry.
Explain that last part again, because that was the curious part. When I read this letter, my immediate conclusion was that you're out of compliance with the use of these funds. Because there isn't a fish-rearing facility there. There's trout hatchery and rearing ponds for fish-rearing purposes. Now, your last statement interpreted that to mean, well, you're protecting the shoreline, and so that serves that purpose. And that seems dicey. So why don't you explain to me go into detail on how that shoreline preserves fish-rearing purposes from the Dingell Johnson Sport Fish Restoration Program?
Madam Chair and Senator Chaudhry, I went back and reviewed the original files from the 60s that proposed this hatchery facility, and it was a comprehensive proposal that included the part where the ponds and the raceways are. It also included a plan to acquire approximately 40 acres on the south end of that to forestall future development and provide a discharge area for the hatchery. That was the original purpose. That's still a purpose. The purposes have expanded since then. There's now public fishing and hunting and spring water use, but the original purpose to forestall development, we now understand the aquifer better than we did at that time. We know that there's the potential for uncontrolled flow from wells that are drilled that reduce the pressure in the springs in the hatchery, so those original purposes are still being served.
Okay, great. So then, Madam Chair, Mr. Bogus, then the A3 amendment should then be able to solve that issue, because it creates the conservation easement, and then it restricts the addition of wells. So that should all remain in sound compliance with your interpretation of the program.
Madam Chair and Senator Chaudhry, my interpretation of the A3 amendment is it would allow the construction of a well.
It says no additional wells may be constructed on the land sold under this section, except for one standard residential well. I don't see how that's going to violate any fish-rearing purposes. Besides, there are already wells on that property.
Mr. Bogus.
Madam Chair, I would just point out that back in 1991, when we didn't have as good an understanding of the hydrology of the groundwater, there's artesian springs and wells in this area, and we actually had a well put in on the state property, or attempted to provide public drinking water, and that well became uncontrolled and reduced the pressure, and it was very difficult to get that well capped and resolved. So there's a risk of any additional wells given the artesian nature of the groundwater, that they could affect the flow to the springs and the hatchery.
All right, Senator Fredrickson, then I'll call on Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Bogus, what are the consequences of violating the Dingell Johnson Act when the state receives money and expends those funds for certain purposes and then does not consistently comply with those provisions?
Madam Chair and Senator Fredrickson, if we don't comply with Dingell Johnson, or the hunting equivalent is Pittman-Robertson, we can be found in diversion of federal funds, and then the federal government could cut off all federal aid to the state until we get back into compliance. So, and I'm not exactly sure, and maybe Ms. Lewis, being an attorney, would know, but if we have a state law that requires disposition of this and we have a federal law that doesn't allow disposition without their approval, I'm not sure that we could dispose of it under state law.
Madam Chair.
Senator Shetry.
Senator, Mr. Bogus, I would presume you would just return the money that you received. Right?
Madam Chair and Senator Shadre, it isn't always just a matter of the money. They look at the property, and if it's continuing to be used for its original purpose, they might rule that we've lost control of the property, therefore it can be disposed of. I'm just not sure how the federal law and the state law are going to intersect if this were to pass.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. So what you're saying, Mr. Bogus, is that despite this April 24th letter, you're actually not sure about what the implications are about Dingell Johnson.
Madam Chair and Senator Shadre, that letter is very clear that there is a federal interest in this land and that federal interest would have to be resolved.
But Madam Chair, Mr. Bogus, you're not sure what that interest is.
Madam Chair, Senator Shadre, we're sure what the interest is. I'm not sure that even if the state legislature says it has to be sold, that the federal government will allow it to be sold. Okay. That's what I'm not sure about.
Senator Olson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I was just going to say that, you know, I understand the sympathy for this family and the personal attachment to this land. But there was a process in the courts that took place in the 70s to address this issue, and I just think it sets a dangerous precedent if we're hearing essentially different factual information about this, and that's the kind of thing that there definitely was the Carlson's view of the facts of this situation, but there are people who were there within the DNR and locally who have a different view of the purpose of that hatchery originally and the purpose of this land. And so that's where I think this sets a very dangerous precedent.
Thank you. Senator Latz.
Madam Chair and members, the hatchery is upstream from the Carlson land. So the only interest that the DNR could have had was, as they stated, to preserve Discharge Pond, which is still there, although which has filled in quite a bit because the hatchery apparently hasn't taken good care of it. It used to be a fairly deep pond. It's now quite silted in. And that pond also is mostly in public land bordering it, but also has private land bordering it on the bottom southern end of that pond. And that apparently has not caused the DNR to have to go take that private land by eminent domain because they apparently feel they can continue to use the pond as is for their discharge needs. So returning this land to the Carlsons should have no impact on the ability of the hatchery to discharge in there. There was an eminent domain proceeding a long time ago, and the results are presumably based upon the representations at the time of what the DNR was going to do with the land or with their hatchery. That has not come to pass. So, and there is no other remedy now for the Carlsons other than to come to the legislature seeking relief.
We could debate this for a really long time.
Final
comment, then we're going to vote.
My own final point of view, the land subcommittee and the policy committee voted to keep this provision in. So my own view is that I think if we defeat the Saxhog Amendment and then adopt the A3, I think that'll be a good compromise for the legal rights as well as the environment. So I would encourage members to consider that. And Senator Latz, I think whatever happens, I think this new revelation about Dingell Johnson is going to be very important. And it sounds like the federal government needs to review this parcel regardless, because it does not appear that the funds were necessarily used for the purposes that they received. In fact, the testimony we just heard was that we weren't sure. So that whatever happens today, I think there's more to investigate.
Madam Chair,
Senator Saxon.
I'll renew the motion.
All right. I think everyone has heard enough, hopefully, to understand the issue. If not, anyone else raise your hand? All right. On Senator Saxhog, motion to delete the section. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Ooh, chair is in doubt. Sorry, guys. Those in favor, raise your hand. OK. Okay. Those opposed? Ayes. Okay. On a vote of 4-5, the motion does not prevail.
Move the A3 then.
Okay. Senator Schott removes the A3 amendment. Do we have that in front of us yet? Senator Fredrickson.
I think members have it.
Go ahead, Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, I'd like to divide the amendment between lines 7 and 8.
We have the A3.
Senator Fredrickson, how would you like to divide it, or do you want
between
to ask?
Between lines 7 and 8, I'd like to vote on the last two lines separately.
Would you like to vote on those first? Which part would you like preferred?
Senator Chaudhry.
Okay, well, Senator Chaudhry, do you have a preference? Which?
I believe the person who is dividing the motion.
No.
Oh, okay. All right. Then let's definitely vote on the first portion first.
All right. On the first part of the amendment, does everyone, Senator Fredrickson, comments?
Madam Chair, I voted for Senator Saxhog's amendment first, but I would support the first half of the amendment.
Okay. Any other questions on the first portion of the amendment? Lines 1-1 to 1-7 have been moved by Senator Chaudhry. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Chaudhry, would you like to move lines 1.8 to 1.9?
Yep.
Any discussion on that
section? Madam Chair, we have in law now a process for appraising that the commissioner has to go through. It's a set process. They do it often. I don't know why we would want to replace the commissioner with an independent appraisal that takes into account restrictions in this paragraph. An appraiser hired by the department or employed by the department is going to take that into consideration when they make the appraisal. I don't think we should start a precedent of not referring this to the commissioner.
Senator Chaudhry.
Madam Chair, Senator Fredrickson, we do have independent appraisals all the time.
Yes.
on state-owned land. And this, I think the concern here is that there was enough controversy and mistrust, for right or wrong, of the department's point of view, where an independent appraisal would be warranted in this matter. And I think that's the only thing that this is saying.
Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, I think that would take place with the existing law that's in this.
Okay. Does this portion contradict?
Chaudhry.
Current law?
Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, it replaces. Now, maybe Ms. Lewis.
Yeah, let's ask someone from the DNR.
Because I don't think this section is necessary, and I don't think we should start putting it into statute.
Ms. Lewis?
Madam Chair, members, what the DNR does is, when we're doing an appraised value, we hire an independent appraiser that's under a master contract with the state. They hold an appraiser's license with the state. And so it would not be done by a DNR employee. It would be done under a contract. And that's the normal process that we have in place.
Madam Chair, Ms. Lewis, does this language contradict that process? And if so, what language would reflect the current process?
Ms. Lewis.
Madam Chair, the current language, when I read as determined by the commissioner, would reflect the process that we currently follow. I think the question, when I see this new language, raises my issue of who hires that independent appraiser, and I find it a little bit more confusing to deal with.
Okay. All right. So, Madam Chair, Senator Latz, I understand your concern and your constituents' concern, because they don't want the governor or the commissioner running the appraisal. But then apparently by a course of administrative process, it appears that an independent appraiser will be hired anyway. Is there something better that can be written here that reflects both intents? Ms. Lewis?
Ms. Lewis?
Madam Chair, I can assure the committee that if this bill becomes law, we will hire, it goes through my staff, and we will hire an appraiser through the master contract process. And it is a violation of appraisal standards to direct the appraiser to determine the value, and they are held to an ethical standard. So that's the practice we would normally follow, so the language as proposed would meet that standard.
Senator Lantz.
Madam Chair, I wonder if there's any timeline that is required by that. Senator Chaudhry was right. There is a fair amount of distrust, for better or worse. And my constituent, I know, would be concerned about the commissioner delaying or doing something else that might interfere with the process.
Senator Bach?
Well, Madam Chair, my question is to Ms. Lewis. If the individual who wants to make the purchase thinks the appraisal is not an accurate reflection of the value, is there some kind of an appeal process where they can get their own independent appraisal and any kind of opportunity for additional review, or is the appraisal number the department gets simply the end?
Ms. Lewis.
Madam Chair, Senator, for land sales, no, there's not a process. It's the buyer can obviously decide they're not going to go through with the purchase. There is a process under the land acquisition procedures for when we're buying from a willing seller that they can get their own appraisal, and that's considered with the state's appraisal when the value is determined.
Madam Chair, Senator Fredrickson, would you be willing to leave this language in with the commitment to hash out some more detailed language that is better, clearer?
Senator Fredrickson.
As this moves forward.
Senator Chaudhry, how about if we take it out and if you want to add something later? Because I think we have in law now a very defined process that's worked well. We have independent appraisers, as Ms. Lewis suggested, and there is a lot of land sold and purchased by the state under this system. And I think if we start putting into law language like this that varies from the long-established process that's worked, that we'll start seeing this in many bills that come through here.
All right, this has not been voted on yet.
Right.
It's not in the bill, so we could just defer this part of the issue until there's some more work done on it. But that's up to you, Senator Chaudhry, if you're willing to withdraw this part of the amendment.
Madam Chair, Senator Lantz, it's your pleasure.
Senator Lantz.
Madam Chair, members, this is not really my area of expertise. I'd be more comfortable if an independent appraisal is already part of the commissioner's process, that if you state such in the bill, it would not interfere with the commissioner's process. But I know it would give some comfort to my constituent that, in fact, that was going to happen.
Senator Bach, did I see your hand up?
Well, maybe I'll pass. I concur with Senator Lantz on maybe we should put some kind of a date by which the appraisal has to be presented to the individual who wants to purchase the property. I mean, unless counsel can tell me, does that have to happen? This is going into session law. Does it have to happen by the end of the biennium, or what's the procedure?
Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, there's a date in this amendment by October 1, 2009.
Does that apply to all of the,
that's the sale
provisions? Or that's the sale date?
Oh, okay.
So the appraisal would have to be before then,
right?
Clearly.
Sure. Okay.
So I guess that is a pretty short
Thank
timeline.
You.
Does that work? All right. So what are we going to do? Are we going to vote on this, line 7 and 8, or 8 and 9? All right. On the motion, any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. Okay, I think we're done on this section. Thank you, senators, for being here.
Thank
Let's
you,
look at the fiscal note for a minute. That's our job here. Mr. Mueller, can you just explain this a little bit for us?
Madam Chair, there is a fiscal note for this bill. Mostly, it should have been handed out to members. Mostly, it shows a net revenue increase going into a few funds, mostly the land acquisition fund, and there are a couple of permanent land sales that would affect the permanent school fund that would net some revenue to the permanent school fund. However, there is one section of the bill where the DNR, it's the piece of the land sale of the Wayzata portion of land, where the DNR is claiming we would lose potentially $100,000 worth of general fund revenue. The sale of that land, the proceeds of it would be deposited into the general fund.
Really got it.
If you look on page 4 of the fiscal note, there is DNR's explanation on the fiscal note of the potential loss of revenue that would happen under the current language in the bill. And it's more of an issue of what the assessed value of the land is. There's some differences of opinion on that. I guess for our purposes, it's whether do we got to count $100,000 loss of revenue if this transfer proceeds. It's all, and it might be something that we'll have to talk more with the full finance committee about whether we really have to count this as a lost revenue or not. There's maybe some difference of opinion if we really have to count this, because if the land is never sold, we wouldn't get the revenue either. So that's
all
sort
right.
of the issue.
Thank you, Madam, Mr. Mueller.
Madam
Senator
Chair,
Sogan.
And to Mr. Mueller's comments on the fiscal note, and to respect to the DNR, I think it's a stretch to say that this would be a $50,000 or $100,000 loss. There has been pretty much one-sided negotiations going on this piece of property. It really can't be used for anything else. City of Wayzata would like to do some economic development and redevelopment in that area. It is a narrow strip of land. It certainly serves a purpose. But there is infrastructure under that piece of property. It is not going to be used for anything else. We should, I think, let them take it and use it. And if it ever is used for anything else, it has to come back to the state of Minnesota. That's, we have that in statute. So I think they're making a reasonable request. Senator Olson has carried some water for them, so she may want to weigh in as well.
Madam
Senator
Chair.
Olson, Senator Jen Olson, I should say for the record. It's the second Senator Olson today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The listening to the discussion over appraisals, the initial appraisal and the initial price that the DNR expected of this was over around in the neighborhood of $400,000. This parcel is less than 0.2 acres. It is 25 feet wide, a zigzag, approximately 150 feet long. At that price, it would be charging at the rate of $2 million an acre. If that is the appraisal process that's being used, I think it is more than a stretch. I understand the House bill has brought that down, and the DNR had come down to $100,000. That still makes it $500,000 an acre for a piece of land that you can't do anything on.
Senator Olson,
Wayzata holds the easement over the DNR land for a drainage. It's not a ditch. Pipes have been put in that have drained treated water, naturally treated water from an upper pond, and also have catching the storm water from the adjoining area and taking it to a pond. So the original premise was that somehow this could be charged at the rate of a square footage for retail space, a space that could never be put on it. So right now, the reality, part of the premise is the adjoining area will be redeveloped at some point. It is not going forward, so even the city's plan that they've had in place for 10 years to straighten the street, which would cover part of this area, would not go forward until that development occurs. They had, in fact, offered $50,000, which is still $250,000 an acre, which, again, I think is even beyond the stretch. DNR has not seen fit to accept that. And so I hope that you would leave this in as the for no consideration. It needs to be discussed. I think there may be some precedent setting if we were to put a dollar figure into the law that is really a far cry from a real value and set a precedent for future pursuits or actions. So I hope that you would leave it in as the law was passed a year or two ago that requires that if it's sold, that it be sold to Wayzata for less, and it may be sold for less than the market value.
All right.
But
thank you.
That
thank
law
you,
will stay will stand.
Thank you. Appreciate your comments. Mr.
Madam
Meyer.
Chair, just really briefly,
as you all know, the budget bill that the governor signed into law last night does contain language that prohibits the DNR from selling any units of the Outdoor Recreation Act to meet the legislative mandate to pay for past spending the legislature approved back in 2005 and 2007. So we need to sell land to pay for the credit card debt of the state. This is probably the beginning of these types of discussions that we're going to have, because these are the only types of parcels we can sell right now. And we will be looking to make money and to pay that debt off of all parcels that we can. This is a parcel that does have a value. It's part of the largest tax increment financing project probably in that part of the state, that part of the city that's going to be going on in the next couple of years. It does retain value. We need to sell it to pay off the debt for the state, and that's the state's position. Our appraisal is higher than what they have based upon the highest and best use as retail or part of a parking lot for a huge retail development. Conveying this land to Hennepin County for no cost, again, sets another precedent that kind of goes against the discussions we had last week in the conference committee about what the state should be selling and what the state shouldn't be selling. So this is a piece of land we're looking to sell to pay off that general fund debt. And unfortunately, it's going to be at the cost of Hennepin County because the land is there and it does have a value.
Madam Chair?
Olson, and then we really need Madam to Chair,
it
bill.
Is not a part of the development project. It would be is publicly owned land, and it would remain publicly owned land by the city of Wayzata.
I guess the point I would make is, Senator Mr. Meyer, you make your point loud and clearly, and we've set a policy that's going to require you to sell non-rec land to meet that obligation until we try to fix that obligation maybe next year. We'll work on that. But in the meantime, I think the question is whether if you did try to sell it, would you get any money for it? I think that's kind of the issue that's in front of us as I see it. If it's not worth anything in terms of the market value, it's not going to help you meet that obligation anyway. So I think that's one of the issues we're hearing.
And Madam Chair, the city will not be able to do anything with it until the tax increment produces something. Because this is a city obligation to provide for the street, not the developer. And so if that development is probably not going to happen for several years. So there isn't a degree of urgency here. And so I certainly would not like to see put in law an expectation of the city, which does not have this money and won't have it until it would come with a tax increment, to put that kind of a burden on him and set that kind of precedent. So it would be better to let things lay if you cannot act in the prudent manner that we usually have for pieces of property that have little or no value to any other than the public purpose.
Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, with that statement in mind, the department would requestfully ask that this provision be taken out because current law does allow it to sell us to Wayzata for less than appraised value. So we'd like to just take out the section of law. We have a couple years to still deal with it, and we can still move forward. So if it's not needed right now, let's not have this debate when we don't have a lot of time to deal with these types of issues. And just we have the authority to sell it to Wayzata at less than appraised value right now, and let us continue to negotiate.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson, we have to stop this debate. I'm really sorry, but we have another bill that's going to take a while. I think we've heard really good discussion. I apologize for cutting you off. We got to finish our hearing. We have session at 12. We have another bill with a lot of amendments. It's a week before the session adjourns. So,
Madam Chair, it's my bill. I'd like to leave it in.
Thank you, Senator Scogin. And by the way, members, Mr. Meyer announced, and I just want to announce, our bill was signed last night by the governor. Hooray. And there was one line item veto, and that was for the clean water assessment. So the rest of it is intact. And so good work, everyone. I wanted to just mention that. I think we understand the motion. If there's no further discussion. Okay. Is there any further discussion? Is there a motion?
I don't believe there was.
There's no motion before me. Would someone like to move the bill then? Senator Fredrickson moves that Senate file 1123 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Finance. Senator Hand, did you have your hand up? All right. On the motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you very much. Senator Shadri.
Thank you.
bill's up. It's coming out.
Hey, Tom, where's Chaudhry?
I don't know.
Is he coming? Oh, paper cut, darling. Hey, Tom, could you take the gavel for a minute?
Yeah.
I gotta just go to the restroom.
Here he comes. Somebody want to move the bill?
No.
Senator Chaudhry, Senate File
1123. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the Omnibus Game and Fish Bill, and I thought maybe Mr. Knopf could just run through the provisions for it. And I don't know what the committee's pleasure is, if you want to see all the – talk about all the provisions or just the finance portions. I'm wondering if maybe we could just kind of reverse of what we did with the last bill, maybe talk about the finance portions first and then talk about – other things that members want to bring up? Whatever the
Senator
pleasure
Chaudhry,
is, do people want to go through the entire bill?
Is any comment from the committee on that? All right, well, let's start with the financial provisions,
yeah.
Mr. Mueller, and then we'll work on from there.
Mr. Chairman, the fiscal note is being handed out. There's a couple items in the bill that deal with none of it was general fund. It all deals with game and fish fund. And they're all pretty small. You go on page 2 of the fiscal note, it lists the sections that have fiscal implications. Section 18 provides a free fishing license to those who are fishing within the state park. Section 15 allows residents aged 90 or older to take fish without a license. Section 16 requires ELS agents to issue a free Cisco netting license to residents under 16 years of age. Sections 20 to 22 together create a lifetime spearing license and a lifetime angling and spearing license and a lifetime sport license with a spearing option. Section 25, this is probably the biggest fiscal item in the bill right now, provides a new non-resident spearing license at a cost of $37.50. Section 27, it's a technical adjustment again to the definition shelter, and that has some revenue implications. Then the last person is, or the last section, section 37 through 40 deals with a fishing contest and determines whether a DNR has to issue a permit and the process for doing it, namely an online process. Some of the revenue assumptions that I've talked to the DNR, and on a couple of them, there's cost to the electronic licensing system of about $5,000 for when they have to do new programs to issue different kinds of new licenses. So there's two of those in the bill. And in talking to the DNR, they said those costs could be covered within their current appropriations. The other one on page 4 of the fiscal note, this dealing with the new fishing tournament permits, the changes in the bill, they have two cost items on the bottom of page 4 of the fiscal note. One is $15,000 to develop an online application system for the tournament, the new permit fishing tournament online permit process, and then also some best management practices, about $3,500. And what I have done, I prepared an amendment that appropriates $15,000 one time from the Game and Fish Fund to cover those online application systems for the tournament. So it'll be up to the committee if we want to do that. But essentially all the other costs in the bill are the DNR said they could cover. And actually with the new revenues that coming from the non-resident spearing, there'll be more revenues coming into this bill that would cover that $15,000 one-time cost, and then ongoing there would actually be a net increase of $61,000 of revenues coming into the Game and Fish Fund. So those are the fiscal implications in the bill. And like I said, I have an amendment here. if we want to give the DNR the $15,000 for that online, for developing an online process for the fishing tournaments.
I can move that, Madam Chair.
All right. Let's pass that amendment out.
The other thing that I would add to that, Madam Chair, is that there probably was not a calculation that we're probably going to get some additional revenue those fishing tournaments because of the looser restrictions, and that I think we do capture some additional people who would pay a fee, albeit it will be lower. So I think there will be, I don't think that was calculated. I don't know how they would, but my guess is that we'll get some additional revenue out of that too.
All right. Senator Schott removes the A-10 amendment. Oh, we haven't passed it out yet. Okay. Does everyone have it?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Knopf.
The only thing I would add on the amendment is on line 1.4 after fund, insert to the Commissioner of Natural Resources.
Incorporate that.
All right. Senator Schott reincorporates that language. Wait till everybody has the amendment. To the Commissioner of Natural Resources or something like that.
Thank you.
Something like that. I think he has it. All right. Any questions on the A-10 amendment? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Motion prevails. Senator Chaudhry, any more? Oh, Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, I have a question on Section 12. and maybe Council can tell me what Subdivision 1 is.
What page are you on, Senator Bach?
Page 5 on line 5.21. I'm wondering what Subdivision 1 is.
97B.081 Subdivision 1?
Yes.
All right. Mr. Knopf?
Madam Chair, this is from Senator Senjim's Shining Bill. What this does is this is a penalty for shining with an implement to take a wild animal, basically a bow and arrow, a firearm, or any other implement capable of taking game. That's being amended in here, and it doesn't line up with the language on 5.22 to 5.23. And so what this does is it lines up the penalty with the language. And basically, so whatever the language reads for that, then this penalty provision would apply.
So, Madam Chair,
Senator Bach.
Mr. Knopf, so we're really not making any policy change here?
Well,
page 11.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, if you look on page 11, you see that the penalty lined up before with the language, but there is a slight change in the language. Most of it's technical in there, but if you look on 11.18 to 11.19, it used to read an implement that could be used to kill big game, and now it's to take big game, small game, or unprotected wild animals. So it is a change in the policy of what constitutes a gross misdemeanor under the using artificial lights to take animals. And so this picks that up then. So it's whatever Subdivision 1 is. Subdivision 1 is considered the gross misdemeanor when you have an implement. Subdivision 2 is the misdemeanor when you don't have an implement in hand.
So,
Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, I just want to be sure that someday when I'm a grandpa, hope to be, and I got couple grandkids in my car, and we go for a little ride in the evening, and we see some deer out on a field, that I can kind of back around and turn my headlights out there, and the kids can learn how to counting the number of deer's eyes they see. I just want to make sure that I'm not going to be guilty of a gross misdemeanor for doing that.
And have your grandkids see Grandpa get arrested or cited.
Not be a good thing.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, if you did have an implement to take big game, small game, or unprotected wild animals, such as a bow and arrow or a firearm, you could be convicted of gross misdemeanor under this. But without that, then you would fall under the other part of the bill. If you look in the next subdivision on page 12, currently it's between September 1st and December 31st. After 10 p.m., you can't do that. What this would say now is that year-round, if it's 2 hours after sunset until sunrise, you could be guilty of a misdemeanor if you're out doing that, if you're outside of that two-hour window.
Madam Chair, Mr. Knopf, what about if you have a gun or a bow in your car, is it Is that never, or is it still after two hours after sunset?
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, it would be basically you couldn't have a firearm in your car while you were shining. Without a firearm, it's 2 hours after, within the first 2 hours after sunset, you can, but after that, no.
Yeah. Senator Pariseau?
I don't know if everybody on the committee is aware, but there are a lot of coon hunters that hunt with hounds. And, you know, lights are kind of important to find out where that coon is up in a tree.
Madam.
So I'm kind of wondering how many people we're putting in jeopardy here, whether to locate, because locating is one of the things that the hounds help you do.
Madam Chair,
can tell you which tree it's in, at least.
Madam Chair, Senator Pariseau, on the bottom of page 12 and the top of page 13, you'll see exceptions that are provided. The first part is basically for both the with a firearm or without. So number one on the top of page 13, you can cast the rays of a spotlight, headlight, or other artificial light to take raccoons. Two, you can hunt fox or coyote from January 1 to March 15 as long as you're on foot. And you can see the provisions there. And three, cast the rays to retrieve wounded or dead big game animals. So you can, as long as you're on foot and not in possession of a firearm or bow, you can also have another type of implement when you're retrieving wounded or dead big game. In fact, that's actually an additional allowance under current law. You would not be able to have any kind of implement that could take big game in your hands when you're out retrieving wounded or dead big game after sunset.
Members, we're going to be finished on this bill in a half hour.
Yeah, Senator, could I just understand where these particular new changes were promulgated, whether from department or not from department?
Madam Chair, Senator Press, this is from Senator Senjem's bill. The department helped moderate or whatever discussions on this topic, so they did have some involvement, but it's not a department position. These exceptions that are put in place here are actually recodified. You'll see a number of stricken language on the previous two pages, and what this does is recodify the exceptions from current law. As I said earlier, the new one is on 13.10. That is not under current law.
Okay, Senator, I think we need to move on. Senator Chaudhry, I know there's been some work with local governments, and there's a compromise.
If there's an amendment on that, I can move that.
That'd be great. Let's push that out. And I don't know if there's other amendments that members have, but we should try to get to them. Senator Kubley?
Well, I was just going to say I had an amendment, but we're not done
here
yet. So
we'll take yours next.
All right. Madam Chair, I have the A8 amendment.
This one, we haven't done this one yet.
All right.
So we'll pass out the A5 and then pass out the A8 next.
I'll move the A5.
Thank you, Senator Chaudhry. Do you want to explain it briefly?
Madam Chair, this relates to the issue of bow fishing at night. We had extensive testimony on it. There was near total consensus that this should be allowed for a variety of reasons. There's one issue regarding allowing bow fishing at night, bow fishing on the Mississippi River within the metro area, and that is a change. And so I work with the League of Minnesota Cities as well as City of Minneapolis. They presented some language to me, and I felt it was reasonable, and so that's what this encompasses. This is just regarding local ordinances and the discharge discharge of an arrow while bow fishing.
Senator Chaudhry, I really appreciate this amendment. I think it allows you to move forward on the purposes of your bill and to really support bow fishing everywhere, but it also doesn't just have a blanket override of local governments, which I'm uncomfortable with, so I think this is a really good compromise. I appreciate it.
And Madam Chair, that's fine. I mean, I think the testimony was clear that it's honestly not a danger because during bow fishing, your arrow is connected to a string. But I think it's also important to bring it when we have new issues regarding hunting and fishing that, some people need a little bit more communities need a little bit more time to become accustomed to it, and if this accommodates those concerns, that's fine.
All right. Any discussion on the A5 amendment? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Senator Kubley?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have the A8 amendment.
Senator Kubley, while it's being passed out, why don't you start it?
All right. Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment would simply allow the golden shiner minnow to come into the state for a short period of time during the ice fishing season. I know the bait shops would like to see, the availability of this species of minnow for bait during that time. But it also does say that the person that's bringing them into the state must be certified free of any disease or of any invasive species by a testing method that's certified by the Federal Department of Agriculture.
Senator Kubley, are they going to, you know, take like a blood test of every minnow, or how are they going to do this? How are they going to determine that every little teeny tiny minnow is free of disease?
Well, Madam Chair, I'm not sure what the method is with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, but these minnows are generally raised on farms that have never had the disease. And, you know, I guess my assumption would be that if they've never had it, you know, it would be okay. But I don't know what the criteria are from the Federal Department of Ag.
Senator Chaudhry.
Madam Chair, these are generally tested at the University of Minnesota at their veterinary lab. It would use the same, these would be the same certifications that the DNR uses for importing its own minnows. And I think that's kind of the crux of the matter, is that the DNR imports bait for use in their hatcheries. And it just seems to be an injustice that anglers cannot use their cannot have access to bait as well, particularly when there is such a shortage. This issue was argued vociferously in the policy committee. This is not the language of the bill that was presented. It's a far narrower bill, only on the issue of shiners. It uses the same testing that is used by the DNR for other bait imports. And I should also add that the bait is also tested and certified before it leaves an outstate facility as well. So there's really double testing going on. Golden shiners are not on the VHS susceptible list. And that's why we're comfortable with this language. And although there are still, the DNR, I presume, is still against this language, I think there's a real shortage of bait. There was a huge article on it this past, two days ago.
Maybe.
Yeah. And I think what the article missed was that if it's such a concern, why does the DNR import bait for their own purposes? So either we should allow a limited amount of bait to be imported, particularly on species that are in shortage and are not on the VHS susceptible list, or we should not allow the DNR to import bait either. So it just it seems very inconsistent. It seems like Minnesota anglers should have access, adequate access. This amendment would not establish adequate access, but it would provide some more limited access to bait that is not on a VHS susceptible list that is certified twice, basically.
Senator Chaudhry, let me just ask a question. Yeah. What is the, when the DNR uses it in their hatchery, what do you mean? They're using it to feed their trout? Or?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right, Senator Bach, then Senator Saxon.
Well, Madam Chair, if there is a certification process, and it's about more than just bringing bait into the state. I mean, I have a constituent who has a private trout pond on his property. He does a nonprofit fundraisers, fishing contests on his trout pond. And it's a pretty neat deal, and he raises a lot of money for charity doing that. And he imports trout from Wisconsin. It's approved by the DNR. There's a process you go through, and there's a certification process to prove that they're disease-free. So, this is happening for more than just bait. It happens also for people for stocking purposes.
Senator Saxon.
Well, but this is about invasive species, and whether you're talking about one trout pond or the DNR having it in their hatcheries, what we're really talking about here is 10,000 lakes. And, Senator Kubley talks about they test them and they've never had the disease. Well, I don't know what disease you're talking about. That's the problem here. We don't know what disease we're talking about. This has nothing to do with the water, but we've got emerald ash borer coming across the border. But in terms of water, we almost wiped out Leech Lake with a crawfish. I don't know where that came from. We killed 2 years ago, 17,000 bluebills died on Winnie from a snail. We don't know where that came from. And Prior Lake's got zebra mussels. Mille Lacs got zebra mussels. What I'm worried about here is, again, is not bringing in a bunch of trout to feed a trout pond or bringing in a bunch of bait to feed a hatchery. I'm talking about somebody at, say, on Mille Lacs Lake on Highway 169 going up and opening up into thousands and thousands of lakes, having a potential of bringing in an invasive species. And I'm not saying that the golden shiner has the invasive species or a disease in it. It's what comes in with it.
Senator Fredrickson.
I know we've had a lot of discussion in policy committee about this, but could this is a little different than we had in policy. Could we hear for like 60 seconds what the department thinks of this?
Yes, I was going to call on them. Let me just finish the question. Senator Kubley and then Mr. Boggess, please come on up.
While they're coming up, Madam Chair, I just want to mentioned that all of the invasives that Senator Saxhog mentioned are tested for as part of the testing and certification process. And there's 17 of here that are tested just in before they leave the out-of-state facility, and then they're tested again when they come here, and including zebra mussels, all sorts of mussels, and I can name off all the diseases if you want.
Senator Kubley, you had your hand up.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess, maybe the amendment needs to be amended to state that it comes from, a farm that raises these minnows. I think to me that would relieve your question, Senator Saxhog. And I'm not on the policy committee, so I don't, I'm not really totally aware of all that went on there, but if it's not a public water that's available to everybody to bring in their equipment and it's just being raised on a farm for purposes of sale, it would seem to me that the likelihood of being infected by an invasive species is non-existent.
All right, Mr. Boggess.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Ed Boggess again, and just a real quickly, there's been a longstanding ban on importation of minnows that doesn't apply to game fish, and as Senator Bach mentioned, there is a process for game fish to be imported into the state. There are a couple of exceptions for minnows for importation for re-export and for importation for feeding hatchery fish. The DNR doesn't import minnows to feed hatchery fish, but the private hatchery people do feed fish in some of their ponds. They're allowed to only import those fish for hatchery feeding from adjacent states, not from Arkansas or places like that. States that do allow importation of minnows like South Dakota have seen other invasive species that are now showing up in their wetlands and lakes that were not part of the approved importation, and you get a load of minnows. We continue to be concerned that some of these smaller life stage fish can be difficult to distinguish, and if you have thousands or hundreds of thousands of fish in a load, we continue to be concerned about anything that would open our borders to importation of minnows, given all the invasives and disease issues that we're trying to manage.
Mr. Boggess, if they were farm-raised, would that help?
Madam Chair, I believe most of the ones that are imported from Arkansas are farm-raised, and that's the same ones that resulted in importing some invasives into South Dakota. So I don't know that farm-raised makes any difference.
No.
And is there clear agreement that that's the cause of the invasives in, that you're referring to, that that's where they came from?
Madam Chair, that's my understanding, is that they came, it's an Asian species that came with the minnows that were imported into South Dakota.
Senator Saxon.
A quick question, and I really don't know the answer to this, so I'm asking Senator Bach because I've been up there with him. In Canada, the reason we can't bring bait over, is it because they want to sell all the bait, or do they have some fears about what we're talking about?
Anybody know the answer, Mr. Boggess?
You know, Madam Chair, Senator Saxon, I don't know the answer, but you could, until a few years ago, you could bring leeches in, then they decided that you couldn't bring leeches in. But what's interesting about that is, and Mr. Boggess can correct me if I'm wrong, it might have changed. Canada raised very few leeches. I know when they put that prohibition in place that you couldn't bring leeches in. So as an individual, you couldn't bring leeches across the border into Canada. But when you got to Canada and bought some, wholesale-y, they could be brought into Canada. So you ended up buying imported leeches, but you couldn't personally bring them in. So I think initially when it was proposed just to help their bait stores. And I don't know if that's changed. There was some talk about once they could build up the rearing facilities to start raising their own leeches, that they would ban the wholesale importation of them. But when it initially was enacted, people were pretty upset about it because you drove across the border and you bought the same leeches you could have brought with you for about twice the money.
What about minnows?
As far as I know, minnows have, during my time of going there, minnows have always been prohibited.
Senator Rummel, I'm going to do the 20-second update. We're on the A8 amendment that Senator Kubley's offered that allows importation of minnows for limited usage in next winter for ice fishing, and they have to be tested and found free of invasives. Senator Saxog and others, the department, are concerned that that could lead to invasives coming into the state. That's my encapsulation of the issue in front of us. I think we are ready to vote.
Just final comment, Madam Chair. For us, the bottom line is, do you want certified disease, tested and disease-free bait to come in and with the process, or do you want the bait to continue to come in that's untested and does have the potential of having disease and invasives? And I think that's probably how we've gotten our invasives. They're coming in without testing. This establishes testing.
I think I heard Mr. Boggess say that the minnows that were a concern in the Dakotas were tested. Is that true? Do you know?
Madam Chair, after the policy committee, we received an emphatic email from the South Dakota manager in charge of this saying that those assertions were completely untrue. First of all, about the existence of the types of invasives that the DNR cited, and then secondly, that there is probably a large amount of minnows from South Dakota that are just coming into Minnesota illegally.
Mr. Boggess.
Madam Chair, Mr. Johannes provided the earlier testimony. He had a map of wetlands and lakes in South Dakota with European red. I'm not aware of the email that Senator Chaudhry is talking about. And it seemed like you had one other question that I forgot.
And Rudd is one of the tested.
Whether they were
disease.
Tested.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure if those fish were tested.
Okay. All right, sir, you're waving your hand. You can have 1 minute. And then we're going to vote, members. Senator Phoebe.
Madam Chair and members, as Brent is coming up, this was originally my bill, and as a new legislator, I've learned a lot, and just bringing up minnows causes a lot of energy in the Capitol. So I appreciate you for hearing this today, and this amendment is extremely scaled back, and also I would consider it kind of a pilot. It does have a sunset date on it. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brent Erdahl.
I work for aquaculture and bait and fish farm interests in the state of Minnesota. And I'm honored to be in front of you today and humbled by your presence. I called South Dakota and doing my fact-checking. I talked to two high-ranking officials out there. I posed the question to them, you know, after listening to the testimony, did Asian Rudd come in as a mix-up with Golden Shiners? And both of the high-ranking officials out there who told me the same thing, no, we don't have a smoking gun, and it would be incorrect to assert that they came in as a mix-up with Golden Shiners.
So we don't really know where they came from. But they could have come with the minnows, but it's not proven that they came with the minnows.
What I asked them, and what they told me was to say it came in as a mix-up with Golden Shiners is incorrect.
I think I hear doubt being raised, but we don't have... Honestly, we don't have a clear answer, but there's some concern that it could have led to invasives. We don't, maybe, whatever. Members, make your own decision. I think we've heard the testimony. Mr. Knopf?
Madam Chair, just a quick technical, and Senator Chaudhry can incorporate this. On line 1.5, that should be 97C515, not 501.
Tom.
All right, Senator Kubley, do you want to incorporate that?
That would be fine, Madam Chair.
I guess, I mean, the question really is to me, what if you guys are wrong? What if you're wrong? What if we create a problem? How do you, you can't fix it. Once the problem is here, it's, you know, you can't put that genie back in the bottle or whatever the right metaphor is. It's, you can't get rid of them once they're here, and it's an extremely expensive and difficult problem. I know it sounds appealing. It sounds simple.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I would reiterate that the likelihood of them coming in from a place that it goes through the testing that is listed in this amendment is highly unlikely. The likelihood of it coming in by somebody bringing bait across another state's border, we have no idea where they came from. You know, it seems to me it's much more likely that we get our problems from just, I mean, you know, we don't have a border patrol at our states. We're free to travel from one state to another, and I don't want to change that. But, you know, my suspicion is that they're being brought into the state by from sources that we have no control over.
All right. I think we're ready to vote on the Madam Chair, amendment.
Madam Chair.
Senator Chaudhry, we're ready to vote.
The advocates have brought an issue up to me and are interested in perhaps modifying one or two of the words in the amendment. Wondering if we could temporarily lay this over and take on the other amendments.
How many more amendments do we have to this bill, Mr. Knopf?
Two, three, four.
Oh my gosh. Okay, members, we're gonna we're not gonna finish this bill apparently. Members, we've done a lot of work this session. I just want to remind you, all the things that we passed out of our budget bill, out of our committee this year, took three committees in the House or more longer than it took us. So we've been working hard, and we've been doing our best to try to keep up. But I think we're going to probably have to schedule another committee hearing next week to try to finish our work. So just keep that in mind,
Madam
members.
Chair, you're right. Because in 2 seconds, I'm supposed to be at a finance
committee. We're going to have to adjourn pretty quick. So we can... you know, if we lay this over, I've already told Senator Chaudhry, I'll schedule another committee next week. We're not gonna drop it. We'll try to get it done this session. We just are running on some tight deadlines, members, as you're all aware. Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, from the timing standpoint, does the bill have to go to local government?
No.
I mean, there's rulemaking in here.
Already been.
Or has it been there already?
Okay, good. It just has to go to the full finance committee, as far as I know.
Yep.
So
Madam Chair, just to clarify, it was in a separate bill. Senate File 1110 contained the same provisions that were in here, and they went to the State and Local Government Committee. So it's.
I noticed it's the first engrossment, so I assume this bill didn't go there.
That's right.
All right, members, I think there is a Finance Committee that was scheduled to do the Clean Water Bill, and it's starting. They're waiting for us, basically. So I think the best thing to do is just to lay the whole bill over and give you time to work out the language, come back with another. Senator Kubley, I think it might be best if you just withdraw the amendment for now, just procedurally, and we'll lay the bill on the table and adjourn the meeting.
All right, Madam Chair, I'll withdraw the amendment for now.
All right. Members, we're going to lay Senate File 1116 on the table, and we'll let you know. We'll reschedule a meeting hopefully as early as Monday. With that, the meeting's adjourned.